Well, anyway, we'll skip that. I think we are live over on everywhere else, so we'll get this party started right about. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We're live on, well, not Facebook tonight, but we are live on YouTube and we are live on Crowdcast. And maybe you're listening to us later, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts. It's all good. And folks, I'll tell you what, we have a packed show, such a packed show
Woo!
Tonight that we didn't have room for Pete to be on the show. We had to kick him off.
Yeah, we bounced him. He got bumped. It's a classic Hollywood story. You just got to, sometimes Ed McMahon has to leave and go stay at home.
Exactly. But I'm very excited to be here with you, Justin, and I'm very excited about the bevy of guests we have. I think it's fair to call them a bevy, right?
That's a beautiful word to use. It's short for beverage, I believe.
Yes, there are. I don't have a follow-up to that. I'm sorry. I'll tell you what. Why don't we bring in our first guest because we are so packed this evening. He is the creator behind Zoop's new campaign for 9 Lives. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Horton. Hello.
Hello. Great to meet you both and great to be here and talk a little bit about some crowdfunding comics and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. So we have a lot of Zoop guests on the show. There's a new crowdfunding platform that, for anybody who is hearing for the first time, is pretty heavily curated. Just looking over the platform right now, I'm going to refresh it so I make sure I have the most current number. You got 2 days left. You're at 3,992 out of 5,000. We're going to see what we could do here with our vaunted comic book club bump
in terms
of hopefully getting you up. This is like a fundraiser for you now. We're going to have a little thermometer on the side and everything.
Yeah.
But let's talk about this because this book is very cool and I am fingers crossed it gets funded because it's very neat. What do you want to talk us through the pitch, the concept for 9 Lives?
Yeah. Well, originally myself and artist Chris Peterson originally thought this up about 8 or 9 years ago and pitched it around to the regular comic book publishers and got a couple of nibbles and some people that really, really thought it was neat. But as you know, it's really hard to break in, even with good projects, into indie comics, even if you're already established, which we were. And so they unfortunately turned us down. So I put it in the drawer for many years. Then I thought, just this year, why don't I do some crowdfunded comics? I thought about Kickstarter, but I know that I would be terrible about fulfillment. I'd be bad at mailing things out to people. I'd be one of those creators that goes in with great intentions and does the Kickstarter and then never actually mails the books to people and everyone would hate me. So I talked to Zoop, who is a competing crowdfunding service specializing in comics, run by some comic book industry veterans. And they said they would handle all the fulfillment for a percentage and their books have been getting funded. So I thought, why don't I take this out of the drawer, you know, send Chris Peterson an email. I haven't talked to him in a couple of years and see if he wants to revive this story. And he said, sure. And we've only got about $1,000 left on it, about 20% of the funding and a day and a half to go. And 9 Lives is a neat story. It is all about Cleo, who is the sixth out of 9 incarnations of the same woman throughout history. And she is in the 1920s and she is a nightclub singer and has this strange ability to turn water into alcohol.
Now, I have a couple questions about that. What research did you do for this? And is there any, did you find any way for that to happen sort of here in our real world?
Well, for research, I studied a lot of movie posters and movies of the 1920s, the flapper era. Especially first the cover and the variant cover by Lee Tran. I sent them a lot of references there and I looked up a lot of the slang being used. But it turns out flappers invented a lot of the slang that we use even today. It's lasted 100 years.
They were the bee's knees.
Exactly. That's one right there that has stood the test of time. And hopefully we'll get to do more issues studying the other Cleos in different time periods. It turns out she's being chased by a serial killer who is also reincarnated throughout history and is attacking all the versions of her at the same time. So she has to defend herself using her strange power, which is only a small piece of what she can actually do. As you can see, so you can see many of the different variations of Cleo. So if you like Orphan Black, it's along those lines. It's really neat. And Chris Peterson is a fantastic artist who's only improved in the last several years, and he does this kind of two-tone minimalist color thing, which I really like on the book.
That all sounds amazing, and the art is great. But my question was about the turning water into specifically. And you really dodged the question. It makes me think you're onto something. What's your method? And would it turn the ice cube into frozen gin as well? These are just the questions running through my head.
Yes, she turns the ice into those alcohol cubes that people put into their drinks, so it doesn't dilute it at all. For some reason, all of the different Cleos have powers that relate to what their occupation is. So we have to find out why is that a strange coincidence, and why does the owner keep her on long after he's fired all of the other dancers at his club, because she is able to help him with the speakeasy during Prohibition.
Yeah, huge power in the Prohibition days.
Right. Not only could she turn it into alcohol, but she can make it like aged and stuff, and make it like the really really good stuff.
Oh man, that would save me so much money. I cannot even begin to tell you. Just because we're talking about drinking, I want to bring this up now. So you have another book that already came out called Bowie, Stardust, Ray Guns, and Moon Age Daydreams. And I'll get this will come back around eventually, but every week on the show, we have a actual chef from New Orleans, Brett Macris, aka Stray Bullet. He either curates or designs a drink for us that we drink during the show. And this week, inspired by the Bowie book, he suggested we do a recipe out of a book called Booze and Vinyl One by Andre Darlington, who he's become friendly with due to a Gotham City Very cocktail friendly. Book. That we did. And so it's a book called The Champagne Cup, a drink called The Champagne Cup that I didn't make properly. I just made a B&B, but it's Benedictine and brandy, champagne, and you float like cucumbers and cherries and a couple of other things with it. So it sort of looks like digging stardust a little bit.
I like it. I would try it. Probably hold the cucumbers, but I'd drink the rest of it. It sounds really good. Yeah.
No, I did want to ask you about the Bowie book a little bit, actually. So what was, this is the stupidest way of asking this, but what was it that drew you to David Bowie? Like, it's a stupid thing to ask because David Bowie draws you to David Bowie, but what was it specifically about him that drew you and made him the inspiration for that book?
Well, I've been a fan of his music my whole life. And around 2017, it was about a year since his death, on the 1 year anniversary, Orbital Comics in London did this gallery and took all of these comic book artists and said, why don't you reinterpret his album covers and we'll do a gallery. So all those went online and I was inspired by that specifically to do this graphic novel. And I contacted Mike Allred, cold email. We had never really spoken before. And he happened to just be coming off of Silver Surfer, which was amazing. And he's the world's biggest David Bowie fan, it turns out. And so he signed on.
Huge win.
Yeah, we found a little agent and a publisher and went from there. It took 3 years to produce and went from there. I am doing another one with about a different musician, but I haven't decided on who yet. I'm still talking to just about everyone and haven't signed anything yet. So I can't really narrow it down just yet, but I want to find someone who's equally as well-known and talented as David Bowie for the next one.
Awesome. And let me ask you about that. I know you can't reveal, but do you have like a couple musicians that you're looking at and you're trying to pair it with an artist mentally, or are you like doing a bunch of research, deep diving? What's your process like?
Well, I can't get the Allreds back because they're super busy with some amazing projects. But depending on the artist that goes with it, would also inform the project, because the musician, if they're still alive, would want to approve how their likeness looks on the page. Yeah. And if they're not, then it would go to their estate and their managers. So it all depends. I have a few really good artists in mind to draw something like this. As far as musicians, just think of all of his peers during the 70s and 80s and 90s who were the great musicians of his time. That's who I'm talking to, because I've always been a fan of kind of that classic rock era.
Awesome. We got a comment here on YouTube from Stray Bullet who says, I want a Ziggy Stardust graphic novel.
Well, you're in luck. I did one. There you go. It's out from Inside Comics. You can get it from your local comic store, from Barnes & Noble or Amazon. They've printed a zillion printings, and it's still in print, and it's in about 20 languages.
There you go. Sold. There it is. We did it. That is how we deliver here on this show. That's
instant gratification here.
Anybody ask for anything else real quick in the comments, and we'll deliver it right now, right on this show. Steve, so I always like to ask this when we're talking about any campaigns. Other than the book, what can people expect? What are they going to get?
Well, we have some interesting add-ons. Just yesterday, the artist Chris Peterson emailed us and said, I've got this great idea for a last-minute add-on. Why not offer to draw the cover or a character design for someone's next independent comic book project? And we said, wow, why hasn't anyone else thought of that before? So he put that up on the site immediately, and we've already sold a cover. So he's going to be drawing the cover for someone's next indie book. So that's one of the add-ons. And then I put my Bowie books up there. We got some commissions going on, some original art. And one person who happens to be a really old friend of mine has paid to have himself drawn into the comic. So he will be a background character. I haven't decided if he's going to be run over by a car yet or not, but probably.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Steve, this is a great project. I'm very excited about it. I do hope people fund it. And one of the nice things about Zoop is it isn't like a Kickstarter, right? Like if it doesn't get 100% funded, it's still happening. Is that correct?
No, just like Kickstarter, it has to be fully funded to happen. Okay. Otherwise, I don't know what will happen after that. But we're close enough, so I'm pretty confident we'll get there by tomorrow night.
Yeah, 2 days, you'll get over the line.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I believe in it.
Yeah, doing podcasts like this with our friendly hosts like you guys really helps. I think we get a big bump every time we do one of these. So this is great.
I sure hope so, because, again, it's a great-looking book. It's a super fun concept. Yeah. And the more people purchase the book and support the book, the closer we are to getting the reality of turning water into any alcohol you want.
Cracking the water gin barrier. Come on, guys. Let's go.
Awesome. Steve, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great night.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
All right. There we go. Once again, it is called Nine Lives. It's on Zoop now. There's 2 days left of the campaign as we're taping. So if you're watching this live, definitely go support it right now on Zoop. If you're listening in the next 2 days, awesome. Other than that, oops, I guess.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you if it's 3 days from now. I'm sorry.
That's how time works. You got to be on it.
Yeah. Well, listen, why don't we bring in our next guest? They are the creator of Abrams Comics Art's new book, Mimosa, which is out today and is awesome. Whoop. Ladies and gentlemen, Archie Biongiovanni, hello.
Hello.
Oh my gosh, thank you for coming. Congratulations on your publish day. That's today,
thank
right?
Thank you. Yep. My book birthday is today. It's exciting. I just went to a local bookstore and saw it on the shelves, which is like one of the
best. Best.
Yeah, it's a great feeling.
Oh, that's awesome. See, I was going to ask what you do on the first day. And is it like you wake up super early, start running around to bookstores, or what's your schedule?
Well, I waited till after 5, but I am going to have some champagne later tonight.
Okay. So.
Yeah,
there it is.
Well, that's very appropriate to the book, of course, which I mentioned. It's called Mimosa. It is. So tell me, I'm going to pitch it by you. This was sort of like the elevator pitch that was going through my head when I was reading it. But it's a queer realities bite set in your late 30s.
Kind of close. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about a group of queers in like their mid late 30s. There's like a group of like a chosen family. As it kind of implodes in on itself. So yeah, it's about like friendship, growing older, growing apart, and like gay dancing, clubs, drinking on the weekdays. Yeah, yeah.
Well, so what was it like putting this together? I mean, my intuition says that at least part of this was perhaps biographical or pulling a little bit on people
first-hand research.
Though certainly it seems fictionalized at the same time, or at least it's certainly being sold as fiction. So what was the mix there? Where did you start with, and how did you ultimately end up with this group of friends, this mix of people?
Yeah, it is like such a mix of like my personal life and like kind of like what I witness within like my friendships, my community, just like going out and about and like participating in like queer events, that is like what is inspiring to me. I kind of want to be as much of like a mirror to the LGBTQ community as I can, while also creating characters who are very much like themselves, who aren't like necessarily like, there is no character that is based on me or based on like people I know, but it is like drawn through like a variety of people and instances that have come through, yeah, through my life and my friendships.
I guess I wanted to ask also about like the inspiration. The central event here is this dance party called Grind. Where did that crop up? When did that
happen? Yeah. So that comes from just loving to party. But it came from like a couple things, but it came from like, I love queer clubs. I love gay bars. I think that they're really important to queers. It's important to me. It's where like I found a lot of my found family. And it's like where I want to be on a Tuesday or a Saturday, just like surrounded by like-minded individuals. So I knew that I was always going to be like a central part in like my, whatever my next like long form story was, it was going to have like a queer party scene or multiple scenes. Several years ago, a pal and I co-hosted an event called Daddy here in Minneapolis. And that lasted about a year. It was once a month. And it was like a queer variety show and dance night. So I kind of got to see like what goes on like behind the scenes of organizing events, which is like a lot of fun, a little bit of drama.
The best kind of research is where you're like, I want to research this big party. How do I do that?
So that also like was the inspiring. I was like, oh, this is like something that's like, one, like I know people can like build it up. You can like organize and make something happen. And I wanted my characters to have that experience. And it was really interesting because when I was drawing this book, it was during 2020. And so I was like drawing these like gay party scenes and these queer clubs and these people in glitter and spandex and like all this stuff that I like no longer had access to. No one had access to. So it felt a little bit kind of like a little love letter as well when I was like able to draw those scenes, since I wasn't like, no one was really able to participate in those scenes during the height of the pandemic.
Now, are you a mimosa aficionado? Do you have the ultimate mimosa mix?
Yeah, I do.
Talk about alcohol recipes constantly.
Yeah.
This is a comic book show. I just want to assure
you. We promise.
Yeah.
I don't have like a go-to mimosa recipe. I do like mimosas. I love like a bubbly rosé though, which I feel like is like mimosa-esque. So that's like my usual like bubbly beverage.
But all that messy vitamin C to get in the way.
Yeah. I wanted like a lot of brunch to happen. I think I originally maybe titled this brunch, and then my editors were like, let's narrow it down a little bit more.
Get rid of the eggs. And
you're like, they're pretty drunk. So like, let's focus on that a little bit. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the age range. I know we talked about this a little bit before, but I was very pleasantly surprised. I feel like normally with these sort of stories, you get people who are first moving to the city in their 20s and they're discovering their sexuality. But I love the idea that not just we're focusing on these people that are a little later in life, but also this process of constant discovery, which I feel like a bad way to put it, but it's almost an underreported part of the queer experience. So what was it like writing about this, and what was your interest in writing about this?
Yeah, so my interest lied is like, well, I had drawn a comic called Grease Bats for almost like 7 years maybe, and that was about queers in their 20s, and then I was like, okay, I'm moving on to a graphic novel, and I really want my characters to age and grow with me. And I think there is like a lot of room in media representation of older queers. It's just like, there's some out there, but there's just like, there's so much room. I think people are drawn to like really safe and familiar stories, like coming out stories or going to the city, like finding yourself stories. When I think there is like such a plethora of, as you were kind of like saying, ways that we like change and grow as we age. And like, I really wanted a story about like the found family you had in your 20s, you all are different in your 30s and 40s. So like, how does that kind of like shift and grow with you or grow apart? So that was also like a part of it. And then I was like a little bit, I kind of wanted to like push back that like queers stopped, like aren't interesting when they're like 30, mm-hmm. 40, 50, 60. Like there is like, it's so much like teen and YA focus, as there should be. Like, I don't think there's anything mm-hmm. wrong with that. Like that's there should be.
Yeah.
But there's like so much now that I'm like, okay, I think we're also ready for like a little bit more complex, more mature stories. And I wanted to draw queers that like in a lot of ways, like already knew themselves. Like, yes, the characters right. grow and change, but like them and their identity and their like sexuality, like that stays the same. They know, like they've done it. They know who they are. And now they can move on to like so many other aspects of themselves.
Will you continue for your next story? Will you start to get into 40s, 50s, into like
retirement? Yes. So my next story actually does go back into like late 20s, early 30s age that I also just signed a contract with Surly Books again. So I do have an upcoming nice. Graphic novel. But the next one that I'm going to pitch and hope out, like hope that it comes to fruition, will feature someone in their like early mid 50s. So yes. Nice. And right at the rate of how long it takes to draw a comic, I should be around there. So
yeah, first hand experience, by the
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
Like, oh boy, gotta go back and change yeah. all this because now I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you about another book. You literally wrote the book on pronouns, mm-hmm. The Guide to the Pronouns. What was the inspiration behind that? And now that that has been out for a while, what mm-hmm. impact have you seen off of yeah. it, if any?
Yeah, cool. That it's called A Quick and Easy Guide to They, Them Pronouns. It looks like this.
Right there.
Nice.
So it's fun. I started, before I started drawing like a lot of comics, I did a lot of zines. And so I worked with my best pal, Tristan Jimerson, and we made a zine called A Cheap and Easy Guide to They, Them Pronouns. And we printed it on like neon paper and it was like $2-3.
Yeah.
We really wanted it to be like, this is how it works. After I changed my pronouns, I found out that I was having like the same conversations like over and over again. So I paired with Tristan, who's a cisgender guy, because he could kind of help bridge the gap of understanding. I could talk about it from like my identity and he can talk about it from like a cisgender perspective of explaining it to other people. And so with like our powers combined, we made this like zine. And eventually one of the copies landed on Ari Yarwood's desk, who was at the time the editor at Limerence Oni Press. And yeah, she was like, do you want to expand this? And so we got back together and I was like, yeah, absolutely. Let's make it something very quick, something very easy. And then it was really important to me that the price point stayed at something affordable. So in the negotiations, I was like, I won't do this if it costs more than $10. I want something that's like wow. accessible. Mm. And so they worked with me. We kept it black and white. And the original, I think, is like $7.99. Now I'm probably
that's awesome.
for like $3 on eBay right now. So, but yeah, and I think the impact of that book has been like pretty awesome. I've gotten like a lot of really awesome notes and feedback from folks who have like used it at like, it's great for like workplaces. It's great for like parents. It isn't like its job isn't trying to convince anyone that these like pronouns are worthwhile. It's like really for people who are like, oh, like I kind of don't understand, but I want to understand, or
right.
having kind of like a tough time with it. Mm. So it helps, like it's an approachable, fast way to kind of get that information across.
Feels like a very useful gift, something you could really book. Just hear.
Yeah,
check this out.
Read this.
Yeah.
We got a question here from YouTube. This is from Derek Mainhart. Question for Archie. Who are your influences?
Oh, great question. So I think a lot of my peers right now influence me. I really love Isabella Rotman's work. Hazel Newland. I love everything that the Nib puts out, which is like, you know, so many like nonfiction and journalistic comics told really in like such smart ways. But I also like love zines, and would spend a lot of my time at like, there's like a queer library here in Minneapolis that has like a zine section. So I would just like spend some hours like looking at old queer zines. So I think that aesthetic has influenced my work. I also like Alison Bechdel a whole bunch, and Dykes to watch out for.
Awesome. Oh, go ahead, Justin.
I was just going to, living in New York and growing up in upstate New York, and like I first got zines and it felt like the zine, it was such a thing. And now, I mean, I'm not out at Chops as much as I ever used to be since pandemic, but like, I feel like I just don't see zines in New York anymore. Is it a thriving scene in Minneapolis?
I would say, I don't know about like thriving, but there are like a couple zine fests a year. So that still like does exist here. We have a really rad like volunteer run bookstore called Bone Shaker Books, and they have a lot of local zines. So it is like there are places you can go and see kind of like what's out there and what's being made locally. I think that it's just like maybe like tougher. I think you have to go to physical places where there are zines, to see it. And then I think that is just like hard because not a lot of people, I think, who make a zine go online and then are like posting their Instagram.
Go check out
about a zine. They're like, it's here. Like it just like exists as like such a physical thing. That it isn't like doesn't usually like translate to like showing it off online all the time.
Well, cool. Archie, listen, congratulations on your book birthday. I don't want to keep you too long. I want you to go get that glass of champagne and celebrate. The book's great. Everybody should check it out. So congratulations on it again. And thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you all.
Thanks, all right. Archie.
There we go. Once again, that is Archie Bongiovanni. And the book is from Abrams. It's called Mimosa. And it's out today in bookstores. So you can get it right now. It is great. We are going to bring in our next guest. She is one of the people behind a new crowdfunding program. You're laughing because we have a lot of guests.
Keep it going. I
know. It is, but they're all great. I'm very excited to chat with everybody. Let's bring in the next one. She's one of the people behind Cthulhu is Hard to Spell, which is true. Lori Foster. Hello, Lori. Hi. Hey. Thank you for coming. I love the ring light behind you. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. I was going to make a joke about Justin's background and how he kind of looks like he's been kidnapped.
It's kind of like you've got the whole angel thing going on with the halo and he's got the hell thing going on with wherever he's sitting.
Right.
Yeah. You look like a hostage negotiator trying to free me from Alex, the clutches of Alex.
Exactly.
Never.
Never. Yeah, no, you won't. I'm stuck.
You've been stuck here for 15 years. It's going to be another 15 years, baby.
I have Stockholm syndrome for comics, so it's perfect.
So, Laurie, this project, first of all, I want to frame this up before I get into this. It looks great. It's awesome. But there's a lot of different aspects going on here that I want to hear you talk about. One of them is it's on a brand new crowdfunding platform. The other is that it existed as a previous project, and now you've taken over and are expanding it. So talk me through the process here. And for anybody listening who doesn't know anything about this, what did it start as and what is it now?
Okay. So initially Cthulhu's Hard to Spell was, you know, curated and edited by Russell Nolte. And he ran three campaigns for it on Kickstarter as like gigantic 260 page hardcovers.
Wow.
Which is, you know, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But they're big. And then after he ran the three, he was initially going to retire the series, but we ended up having a conversation after he participated in one of my anthologies, and he was like, do you want to take it over from here? Would you be interested in that? And I was. And the first thing I wanted to do before making new volumes was to re-release the original volumes as shorter softcovers so that they're more accessible and affordable for people, because not everyone was probably able to buy that brick.
Yeah. It's true. I have a lot of bricks falling out of my basement, so I'm trying to fill them in with books.
Right. And it's not meant to be furniture or a murder weapon. So yes, we wanted something a little more.
Thank you for saying. Thank you for let's keep the murder stuff a little bit on the DL.
So I decided to basically divide the three gigantic hardcovers into six shorter softcovers. So the campaign we're running right now is just for the first three softcovers. And then we also wanted to add merch because he never really did merch. I'm not sure why, but he doesn't like doing it. So we wanted to add in shirts and socks and all kinds of fun Cthulhu related stuff.
Yeah. And so the concept of the book, other than Cthulhu hard to spell, just give us the pitch for the thing, for the project, if you don't mind.
Sure. It's basically a Lovecraft anthology that focuses on the gods and monsters of Lovecraft. It's all ages, but not necessarily for children. Mm-hmm. And it's curated from diverse creators from everywhere. So queer creators, people of color, women creators. We try to get as many people as possible in on this. And it's all over the place. There's terrifying stories. There's ridiculous stories where Lovecraftian gods are undergoing marriage counseling. There's and kind of everything in between.
Well, I think that's a really interesting aspect of the project because I'm sure you're aware. I don't know how much our listeners are necessarily all aware, but Lovecraft has had, I'd say, a complicated legacy over time. So it almost feels like putting female creators, queer creators, more diverse creators behind it is a way of taking back that material.
Right, exactly. So we can, you know, we can enjoy the material, but without thinking about or without
all the racism,
without the racism and the bigotry. I was trying to think of a way to say it.
No, that's all right. He's not alive. He's not going to come on the show and complain about it.
Right. And now that, you know, the queer creators and the people of color can make money from it, he's not going to make any money, which also makes us feel good. Because, you know,
yeah,
as much as all the concepts are genius, he's kind of a crappy person. So we want to move past that and, you know, honor the creations without honoring the person.
Now, obviously, you're dealing with older material here, but when you are putting it together, when you are curating it issue by issue and breaking it up, as a publisher, what are you looking for? What's the rhythm of a specific issue?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess there's a number of things. Just visually, I like having a certain kind of flow, and I'm not sure if I can explain that outside of like the page turns and the next thing that you see kind of flows with the last thing that you saw. Mm. Not necessarily the same theme, but it works. Also kind of, I do like a jarring jump between, again, like a scary story and then like something absolutely ridiculous. So there's kind of a mix of everything. And like, if you don't like one story, you'll like, there's so many stories in each volume. There's more than 20 in each volume. So you'll find something that you like or multiple stories that you like, no matter what.
Talk to us about Cute Thulu. How did, where did this guy come from?
So, when I was looking into merch and all kinds of stuff for the campaign, we looked around at kind of some 3D modelers that were selling their stuff on various 3D websites, and we found Keith Talbot, and he had already designed this Cute Thulu, and we were like, hey, how would you feel about making some of these and hand painting some of these for people? And he was just immediately like, yes, whatever it takes, let's do this, let's work on it. And he was super collaborative, and it was, yeah, we were just instantly like, okay, let's make special boxes for them and let's go crazy with it, because I love it.
They're very cute.
Yeah.
Check it out at Backer Kid. It's very cool.
Well, to that end, I did want to ask you, obviously, this just looking at backer kit right now, this hasn't been an issue at all. You're currently at 13,000 of the 10,000 goal with 14 days left. But why start this on a new crowdfunding platform instead of, say, a Kickstarter or a Zoop or something like that?
I guess a few reasons. The original series was on Kickstarter, so I was like, well, maybe, you know, we'll curate a little bit of a new audience if we move to BackerKit. Just, and when I talked to Russell about it, he was like, I don't mind being the guinea pig, like, let's try it out, let's see what happens. but also I've been working with BackerKit on the back end of my Kickstarter projects for like over a year for surveys and fulfillment. And their services are absolutely phenomenal. They made surveys so much easier, fulfillment so much easier. They're really collaborative, and I like that again. So when I saw that they were running the beta for their crowdfunding, I messaged the people that I already was talking to, and I was like, how would you feel about doing one of these? Like, what do you think? And they were like, yeah, let's try it. Let's see how it goes. So it's kind of all experimental, but I love working with them, and it's been going pretty well. So,
yeah. Awesome.
What can people, I know I asked this earlier with the Zoop thing, but again, I think it's good for people to hear what can people expect other than the book and Cthulhu when they head over to BackerKit?
So we have the three volumes of the book. We have t-shirts with the Stanyak cute, I guess he's also Cthulhu. He's adorable design. And it's funny because it's hard to tell on the campaign itself, but his mouth is actually full of tiny people. So I'm excited for people to get the shirts and realize that because he looks so cute and adorable, but he's got a handful of people and his mouth is just, there's people. So I love that.
Great surprise. Oh, this shirt is horrifying. Perfect. Yeah.
But only if you look really closely.
Yeah, that's great.
And then socks. And then we're also offering a few different kinds of coffee. so we have Cthulhu is hard to caffeinate, decaf coffee for those of you who can't have caffeine. And then we have two different versions of caffeinated coffee. And I think that's it.
Oh my gosh.
Coffee, I can't say having zoomed in on the t-shirt on the page, even though the people are probably about to be murdered, it's still cute.
it's all ages, right?
Yeah, that's all ages murder right there.
Excellent. Lori, congratulations on the project. Very exciting. You're already funded, so you don't need the help anymore, but I hope it gets
stretch
even
goal,
more
baby.
Funded. Stretch goal, bring it on. And I'm looking forward to, hopefully there's going to be more Cthulhu is Hard to Spell new issues in the future. Is that potentially in the offing?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm gonna be starting from the new volume 7 because it'll be the 6 shorter, and I'm gonna be very likely doing it continuing to do it in the shorter volume, so not the 260 page bricks. We might collect them down the line in the bricks, but we're gonna stick with the shorter books, I think. And then we also have plans for D&D monster manual type of stuff with some of the monsters and the gods and maybe some kind of spelling mechanic because it's hard to spell. So I don't know. We're working on it, but I'm really excited.
Awesome. Lori, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations and have a great night.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you guys.
All right.
Get me there out of this basement. Oh, she's gone.
sorry about that, Justin. You had a great joke right there at the end. But check out Cthulhu is Hard to Spell. It's up right now as of this taping. There are 14 days left. And we are going to bring in our final guest for the evening. He's the creator of Seance Room, which is going to have a crossover with Hack Slash, one of our favorite comics of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Goldsmith, hello.
Hello, this is the lounge.
Oh my goodness.
Look at this chill out vibes going on with Ben right now.
Chewing gum I don't even have.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Ben, thank you so much for coming on. So excited to chat with you. As we were talking about before the show, you used to come to the live show back in the day, back when there were shows. So thank you for coming back on as a creator and everything. We really appreciate it. That's awesome.
I remember you, Ben. You lay down in the front row and just chewed invisible gum the whole time. We always had questions about you.
I mean, listen, if you guys think I came from anything besides the free $25 Midtown gift card, Hey, you know, before we jump into anything, you guys need to start doing a version where it's like you get to stay on the couch of the talk show. I want to talk with Lori and Archie and everyone, and I'm just sitting here like, come on, you know.
Well, you know what? That's to get like you behind the curtain here, but we just switched over to this new platform, StreamYard, with our previous platform, Crowdcast. There was literally no way of doing that.
We have the power now.
We have the power now. So yeah, that's a great idea.
It's been so great. No, I used to love going to that show. It was so much fun, and you guys are so great. This is. I told you earlier, and I was not joking. This is the honor. I've been so excited to be on the show this whole time. Mostly for Pete. Where is he? Where is
he's in here? He's like right behind
it's
the
a
bee.
Very tiny window. It's right behind my name. You can't see it.
Man, that's
impressive. We don't know where he is. He was just like, just not going to be here.
Wow. He weirdly ghosted, and he's about to do a road trip that we don't know what's going to happen with that. So a lot of ideas on the table.
A lot of question marks going on here. I do want to talk about your book, Seance Room.
I would love to talk about that. I would love to, Alex. I really would, but there's something even more important that I need to talk about.
Yes, I will.
It's been on my chest for a long time. Oh, and no. It's not the fact that Lori's right. If you zoom into anything, it's terrifying. It is more to do with the fact that, Justin, I am in touch with the space, my friend. And I have my Dinglehopper. It's resting right now. I could not be a bigger fan of those episodes.
I take that. We're of course talking about Mission to Zix, a podcast, an improvised podcast that I guest on, playing Old Durf.
Old Durf, a lot of backflip.
Backflip. I was just about to do a lot of backflips. if you haven't listened to it, it is a very fun podcast.
Oh my
and
God,
I get to be so mean to the main character, though.
It is so good. I could honestly, no joke, sit here and ask you questions about that podcast for the next 20 minutes.
I'm here for it. Alex is
not. I'm not. But all right. Whatever you want to say.
No, it's. I was listening to it, and no joke, on my way to New York Comic Con a few years ago, whatever, and do people need a timeline? So then... actually, if there's Marvel fans in the audience, they probably do. So the... Yeah. independent throwing punches.
Yeah, it's good.
But I was listening to the podcast, and sure enough, it was the episode, the first one that you did. And I remember being at the shows live, and I'd left New York by this point, and just being like, no! Like, so excited. And they're so funny, dude. They are legitimately so funny.
I'll give you a little backstory on that real quick. And Alex, I'll handle this question.
I'll just leave the stream. That's fine.
Don't leave, Alex. We need you here to put pictures up. if you can find some pictures of me doing this, come on.
Yeah,
let's go.
I'll take it back.
No, don't look. Don't Google me. Alden is my friend. We came up doing comedy together.
Alden Ford? Are you talking about Alden Ford?
Of course.
Fleck Deck Center?
Fleck Deck Center. He was like, oh, you should come do the podcast. I was like, great. And I was listening to it, and I was like, all the rest of those characters are so mean to him in the episode, in especially the first season. I was like, in my head, I was like, when I tape, I want to give some power to Fleck.
Right.
And so I said all that nonsense, and then I was like, ha, that was fun. And then they honored it and made that part of the show. I was like, I'm so sorry that so much of your show became about a bunch of shit I improvised and made up with you.
Essentially setting the lore for that entire show.
Insane. But very fun.
But it is for anyone who has some, it's incredible. The whole thing, not just the Justin episodes. Anyway, this is not the
show. Just wrapped up. Yeah,
yeah, it did.
That's all the time we have for Ben, but it's been great. I feel great.
We talked about seance enough, probably
all day long. I've been so excited to say the space to you. It is,
yeah.
All right. Anyway, I wrote a book.
You did, absolutely. But first, here I'm just going to real quick bring up these pictures of Justin. No. Here we go. Oh, that ended up weirdly sideways. There you are, as like a steampunk guy, and here you are, relaxing in your shorts.
I love you as John Cusack's stand-in.
Yeah, I'm 17 years old in that picture.
You were so good.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, there we go.
Alex, why do you have access to these photos? These are deeply personal photos.
Oh, many.
No, no. Definitely, let's keep those on the StreamYard in case you need them.
Absolutely, I'm never deleting them. Ben, let's talk about your book. So, Seance is great. Every issue, you work with a different artist, and it takes place. People could probably intuit at least a little bit of it from the title, but it's sort of like, it's not exactly a Tales from the Crypt type thing, but you have this dude who lives in a creepy house, has kind of seance powers. People come in and you tell a tale off of that using these different ghosts that inhabit the house. Is that a fair estimation of the rough plot of the book?
I would say it's more than fair. You've also added enough words into your, did I summarize this well enough? To leave out any doubt that, you know what I mean? Like there was no, there's wiggle room for you to have been wrong in the way that you described it at the end. Is it generally give or take minus one or two? Yeah, no, you're right though. That was perfect. That was perfect, Alex. I joke because I love.
Oh, thank you.
That was it, man. Yeah, no, it's very Tales from the Crypt. Like the way we always describe it, right? The easy pitch for things. You go, well, it's this plus this. And then the person goes, I know both of those things. And you go, I know, me too. And then you're friends. And ultimately, Tales from the Crypt and Twilight Zone. Actually, I'm wearing my mm-hmm. Twilight Zone shirt right now.
Nice.
But that's it. Because it does the spooky thing. But ultimately, each issue is sort of more psychological, really, more than anything, sort of dressing down things psychologically. Did it feel that way? I hope it did.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, it definitely, don't get me wrong, gets very bloody and violent, particularly at times. But one of the things that I was really struck about reading all of the issues is how, and I'm curious to hear which direction this comes in or which order this comes in, but it very much leads into the strengths of the artist, each story. Each story is not structured the same way. Each story is not the same thing. And it feels like it's tailor-made for the particular style of that artist. So where do you start with? Do you start with, hey, I have this artist is potentially available. Let me craft a story around them. Or do you craft the story first and then bring in the artist?
That's a super good question. You should host a podcast. Do you actually, in all seriousness though, do you... what did you feel?
Ooh.
I don't know. Well, if that's actually an answer to the question, Ben.
Yeah, I don't. I want to know if you're.
I felt that I manifested it simultaneously, and it never existed before I read the comic. Is that correct? Again, I'm leaving myself a little wiggle room there.
Strong answer.
No, I mean, but like, did it feel like the story first and then the art first, or which did it have a feeling, or is it more like, oh, which one was it?
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't specifically know all of those artists other than Ben Templesmith very well. Like, particularly Ben Templesmith, it felt like to me, oh, this is something where this leads into Ben Templesmith's strengths. So having Ben Templesmith, I think at least has to in part craft the story. Also, I don't remember the name of the artist. I'm sorry, but the seventh issue, which is sort of like the goofier issue a little bit where there's a party in the house, that definitely led to that artist's strengths as well. But I think that's true across the series. So which one is it, Ben, now that I've said
that? Well, it's really driving for an answer. Honestly, it feels like you have a lot of just great artists that do a great job. I don't think there's a line of what's driving what. There's just a great synergy to what in my reading of this.
They were great. It actually is both in all seriousness. I have to say all seriousness because I would just sit here and joke with you guys for the next 20 minutes. So.
I mean, you're laying down. You're practically at rest.
Yeah.
It was basically the thing. the computer's falling.
Smash.
Yeah, so like with the Ben Templesmith issue, I had previously written, I knew I had about these four pared down issues that I knew I wanted to do. And I sent Ben I kind of said, well, which one do you want to do? Which is typical of working with artists too, because if we were just going to write something and give it to an artist, just write a book instead. If you want to just be the captain, right? Like it's supposed to be between the two. Every comic book that I've ever loved was a marriage between the artist and the writer. And so whenever I start working on a project, I pretty much ask the artist that I want to work with, like, what do you want to draw? Like, you have to stare at this for the next God knows how many hours of your life. What would you actually want to stare at? And then the other part of that, too, is like you look at it from a business perspective of, all right, so Alex Cormick did one of the issues for Seance Room, right? Now, Alex Cormick did Road of Bones and Sea of Sorrows for IDW. He did a book called Sync for Comics Tribe, which I love, which is one of the best horror comics written by John Lees. Phenomenal. Read it. And so he's got all these different things like, I said, well, what do you want people to see that you can do? And he said, well, I guess I would really like to do these really strong character pieces. And so he got this very sweet, small story, which I kind of equate to like, it's the seance room, the one in the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like a demented for 7 minutes of Up.
Yeah.
You know? so yeah, that's kind of the answer is like, it is that marriage of going, hey, you know, but then like I did have issues that I knew I wanted to do. It's just then kind of going, hey, how do we make this your strength too? Because again, not only do you have to stare at this, but at the end of the day, from a business perspective, you're the guy who's going to have to sit behind the table and go, you know, please buy this book that I made, Sirs and Madams. And then, you know, if you actually care about what you're doing, then you're going to have a much easier time making that sale.
Go ahead, Justin.
Oh, I see. For something like the seventh issue, which has the arts like more sort of fun or comedic, do you then go back and are like, let me punch this up a little bit. Let me lean into that.
No, dude. So yeah, right. So you're talking about the one Drew Rausch drew that one. And I always say it's like if Beetlejuice the cartoon.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. The Beetlejuice the cartoon, exactly.
I do. So it's really rad. And then so that one, it was that one was kind of perfect because it was the whole thing of like, oh, haunted houses are fun, scary, but what if they were like legitimately scary? Like, what if you walked into a hall of statues that were failures from your life to be, like the first time you drank before five, or the first time you got your divorce papers, or you know what I mean? So it's inherently pretty, it's got that like fun, scary. So then having Justin do it in that, or Drew, you're Justin, having Drew do it in that style.
Don't let me do it.
Do I? We get well. No. Okay. But it was fun. It's that juxtaposition, right? It's like it's the idea of because I don't know. You try to think about how people perceive horror, and a lot of people go into it for different reasons. And sometimes we go into it for fun, sort of forgetting that it's representational of life, which is you know. So yeah, man. But Drew. By the nature of it. Okay, hat on a hat. You know what that is, right, Justin?
Yes.
If I also know what it is.
Alex, get out of here.
Well, yeah, anyway, it's like, no. It's that guy, he's walking through out of the town. He hasn't sold any of his hats, and then the monkey's there, and they
see
his
hats.
He's like, hat on a hat for sale.
Yeah, hat on a hat.
Specifically referring to an old child's tale where it talks about separation of colors, which I think had some strong implications. So anyway, the
wow, I haven't heard that take of cats for sale.
So hat on a hat would have been going in and punching it up, right? Because his art is inherently pretty funny looking.
Yeah.
So you kind of let it do what it does, and then he adds in a whole bunch of stuff because he's got a great sense of humor anyway. But yeah, that's kind of that. And
that's great.
But those are in the Hack Slash. We did Hack Slash.
That was the thing I was going to ask you about is you did a crossover with Hack Slash. Is this, sorry, I might have totally messed up the timeline. Is this out already or this is coming out later this year?
It is coming out later this year.
Okay. All right. So you were nice enough to send us a preview of this. Hack Slash, of course, one of our favorite titles of all time for anybody who hasn't checked it out, created by Tim Seeley. It follows this woman, Cassie Hack, who is the final girl out of a murder spree from a lady named the Lunch Lady. And ultimately she becomes the final girl who kills slashers along with her monstrous friend, Vlad. Great book. Seems like a perfect fit on the surface anyway, but how did you bring it together? How did you talk to Tim about it? And how did you make this happen?
So Tim is I shouldn't say this because then people will go up to him and talk to him. He's really nice.
He's very nice. The reason we first got to connect with him is because Pete went up to him at every con when Hack Slash was first sort of coming out and making its way up. and would like literally hug. They would like see each other and hug a lot. It was very intimate moments.
And no, Justin has a nickname he started calling him, which is Touchy-Feely Tim Seeley.
I don't know if he loves, but maybe put it in the book if there's still time.
I think I've only known him really during like COVID era and a little bit before that. So there wasn't much touchy-feely of anything. It was sort of like masky asky. We got to talk through things, but I don't think it's as catchy, but keep going.
Yeah.
But I went up to him one time at New York Comic Con and just kind of like brazenly was like, hey, I write this book and it feels like something that you, I mean, if you have anything to say about it, let me know, take a look. And he did, and he liked it. And then I don't remember how it all came up, but essentially the thing I remember saying, you know how you kind of distill a memory down to one little moment. For him, it was, I remember him going, someone helped me, so I like to help other people.
Oh, and that's great.
Yeah, right. So
he's touchy feely. He touched you that emotionally.
Right in there. Yep. And basically he let me do this. He was so hands off with this too, which was amazing. Like I sent him the pitch. So the idea, right, is I was saying earlier, psychological is kind of seance rooms thing. As you guys eloquently put, torture is Cassie's thing. Very physical. So it was kind of like a whose thing works better, right? And then you save a lot of real estate, save a lot of time. First thing, no spoilers really. Dude messes up puppies. That's his thing. And so immediately you're like, yeah, fuck this guy. Let's see what awful thing can happen to him. And then it's kind of a back and forth, but it ends up going a little bit deeper and shed some light on, I think, both characters through the foil of their kind of counterpart in action. Harry via Cassie and Cassie via Harry. Because the crossover thing is tough, guys.
Well, that's the other thing that I was going to ask you about. First of all, I think you did a great job with it and really obviously captured your own character. You know how to do that, but you're bringing these other characters and you really gave some great emotional moments for Cassie and Vlad throughout the issue. What was it like trying to craft that? I imagine probably as a fan of Hackslash yourself, there was a fair amount of pressure there that you were putting on.
I could die right this moment. You guys just gave me that. I'm genuinely very awestruck right now.
We're also very touchy-feely.
Yes.
Put it more crassly, how did you smash together your action figures and Tim's action figures?
I just said, this is how the baby's made. And then my wife came over and divorced me. So we...
That feels like it weighs on the book a little bit. There's so much.
You can see right at what page I got the papers. So we're still married, right?
She's just off camera. With the papers.
I didn't hear anybody answer, so I have questions. But keep talking about the book.
There's no wife there.
Married a pillow. James Franco from 30 Rock. So the crossover... It was. What was the original question? The minute you said something nice about the emotional moments, I literally stopped.
Well, it was about that, just in terms of what was the challenges involved in writing these characters that you know, but haven't written before.
How do you make both properties walk away? It's like it's like the bad guys in Batman. How do you get a clear winner and loser, but also keep it so that you can set it up for the next time they do the same thing, right? Like, so it's like you need to have a legitimate story, a legitimate reason this is happening, with actual stakes and with actual interesting needle pushing moments, but at the same time they both have to walk away essentially unchanged because it's not going to continue. So that was sort of the biggest thing, being that Seance Room and a lot of other stories that I've written before were all kind of one shot. You get really good at knowing like a 22 page and going, okay, I've got 7 pages left and I got to do this and let's make sure that we get this all in here. You know, you get really good at that. And then, because then my first, do you guys know Mad Cave? Do you ever read anything by Mad Cave Studios?
We've read a couple of things.
Yeah, I think we've.
Yeah.
Okay. I did. So I wrote RV9 for them, and that was my first ongoing series that I got to write. And very different. So that was a total game changer. And like, I would have actually liked to have done a hack slash long term thing, but it's just not tenable. Besides, that's not a hack slash's thing. You hit and quit, one and done.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, on the other hand, Seance, though, the Seance Room, I feel like is this infinitely malleable property, as all like really good anthologies are. So do you have more in the offing beyond the hack slash stuff? Are there more things you're working on?
Well, yes. So actually a novel version of Seance Room with brand new stories that are just told through prose instead of art, because I can do that and not have to wait for the artist while the artist is working on something else, right?
That's smart. And I feel like you really, all of your artists feel very deliberately chosen and great. So I feel like now you can not have to spend so much time waiting for like a great artist.
Thank you guys. I mean, in all seriousness, I really appreciate your guys' takes on these books and the legitimate thought that's being brought to this, especially where I think I just sent it to you this morning. So the fact that you read all of this in this amount of time is remarkable. Hey man,
we don't have jobs, not anymore.
Yeah, or we do have jobs that don't know that we do that. shush it up, Ben.
But yeah, no, it's great. And then we got some other stuff. I got a book coming out with Scout, Ghosts on the Water, which Alex Cormick, the guy who did the issue, he's doing it with us. And so that's a 3-issue series coming out. And I got a super cool project in the works with a very cool hip hop artist who performed at New York Comic Con last year.
Oh, yes, we're really tipping it.
Well, yeah, Justin's gonna draw it.
What?
And there's your mistake.
Not the first.
I call it doodling. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Justin's gonna doodle it.
All over me.
Ben, if people want to pick up the first 7 issues of Seance Room, where can they do that?
The first 4 issues and the trade both sold out already from SourcePoint Press. The next 4 issues will be coming out from SourcePoint Press. I don't have an exact date yet, but in the next year, it'll be in previews. And then realistically, hit me up on Instagram at Mr. Ben AU, at MRBENAU. My last name's Goldsmith AU, periodic table. Very clever. Sick. Very clever.
Briefly a chemistry major. I'm here for
it. No, you were not.
I was. When I went to college, I was a chemistry major. I was very shy growing up. Became a theater major and disappointed the chemistry world.
I went into college being like, I'm going to be a double major in math and theater. And the first thing I was like, nope, on the math.
Fuck math, right?
Wait a second, Alex, you went to school for theater?
I did, yeah.
Do you guys know
that? Does it not show?
I do. You don't need the attention as badly as the rest of us. I went to the Hart School of Musical Theater.
Oh, wow. There we go.
Look at us.
We should put on a show. Ben, congratulations on the book. Really, it's awesome. Real quick, when does the Hack Slash crossover come out? Is sometime in the fall? Is that correct?
Yeah. So it's all the same as it's going to be a part of 1, 2, 3, 4, Seance Room 5, 6, 7, and then the Hack Slash will culminate it.
Awesome.
Great.
Ben, congratulations. So good seeing you. Great suggestion with bringing in the multiple guests. We'll definitely try that out. And hopefully we'll see you at some live show at some point in the future.
Yeah, please invite me on.
I
like hanging out with you guys. This is so exciting for me. And again, thank you so, 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 truly so very much.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. Have a lovely night. Go find your wife wherever she is in the house.
Nice.
Oh, there she is. I heard her.
Well, that could have been any sort of trapped human. I know about being trapped.
I taught my dog how to sound like a woman, but just one phrase.
I love you.
That's right. Musical theater training right there.
Ben, have a good night. Thanks so much for coming on.
Bye, guys.
Backflip.
right, there got we go. You got him. Check out the Seance Room and check out the Seance Room /crossover that's coming later this year. It is super, super awesome. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. And folks, now we are going to move... Oh, what? You were going to say
something. Next guest. Just bring more. Let's get more people. Yeah, I got more questions. It's like look at the got a little banner here.
We got a little banner truly... because we're going to get into our next section, which is my favorite section because you make it up. It is your audience questions. Whoop. There we go. I figured.
Good. Nice. Some of that is that theater training.
That was a lot of guests. You talk for the rest of the show.
Okay. No problem.
For your audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question either in Q&A over on Crowdcast, which we're keeping going for the time being, or it says Facebook and YouTube, but Facebook is down at the moment, so just YouTube. Leave a question there on absolutely anything, and we will get to it. Now, Justin, I don't know if I should put you on blast here or not, given how many times we talked about what we were drinking and alcohol and everything. You're doing dry March though, right?
We're doing dry. My wife and I are doing dry March, resetting the system. It's terrifying. I had to do a show called Characters Welcome. We had our show, a live show on Sunday at Union Hall in Brooklyn. And it's a whole new game going out there.
How'd you do it without your liquid courage?
Yeah. There's a other, I've apparently underneath all the liquid, there's a baseline courage that still works for me. But I am drinking sparkling water out of a jar right now. Ooh. It looks like moonshine, but it tastes like water.
Oh, there we go. All right. We got a couple of questions here already from YouTube. We got one from Derek. This is, I'm going to ask the piece question. What's on JT's wall? What's on your wall, Justin?
Great question. We got, well, this is a good one. This is, if we're talking horror, I've got the push mower that I use to mow my lawn. That's some old Christmas stuff. We got the tree from the Charlie Brown Christmas Live that I do every winter. Tape measure for doing projects.
Nice.
And that's about. I got an Christmas lights, a credit card costume from a character I used to do. This is sort of my bat cave, except everything is garbage.
Excellent. Well, there we go. We got another question here. This is from Schoikler. What are some titles you first got into because of crossovers?
Ooh, interesting.
Great question there. I could actually say, I don't know if it was the first Marvel comics I read, but definitely the first X-Men comics I read were Fall of the Mutants, which was a very weird place to start because it was like, this is the end of the story. Everybody's going to die. But it was definitely that thing we talk about on the show all the time where I read that. I was like, what is happening here? Who are these characters? This is terrible for them. So I was completely hooked on X-Men comics in particular after reading all that.
Well, similarly, like reading Executioner's Song was one where I was like, oh, I guess now I'm reading all of these X titles. I feel like it was very much, it worked. Like it expanded my line of to reading the whole line for all of those. And I think that's sort of how it works. Like when there's a great crossover, like the Sinestro Corps War, say, I was like, well, now I'm reading all the Green Lantern books going forward for at least a while until, you know, the crossover magic wears off.
I'll also throw out there, I know I've been mentioning this a lot on the show, but it's been very interesting to see this develop. I've been taking my son to the comic book store on Wednesdays. So it's been very interesting to see, like, what does an 8-year-old actually want to read? And mind you, he's an 8-year-old who, like, has been raised in a house full of comic books. So it's probably not the best sample set. But the first thing, there's been a lot of titles he's been interested in, but the one that he is completely hooked into in a big way is Avengers Forever, specifically because I don't know, maybe it's the multiversal thing because Kang was an Ant-Man or something like that, but like he was really interested in that. And when I was telling him about Doom the Living Planet and everything, he thought it was the funniest and most interesting thing. And
that's cool.
Made it like, he was like, I'm going to collect all the issues up to the current issue. I got to do that before I actually start reading it. And I was like, oh no, it's already begun.
Wow. You've really,
I broke him. But he got very interested because of the crossover and then went back and started reading through all of Avengers Forever. And now last Wednesday, I got him volume one of the main Avengers title because I was like, it's eventually going to cross over. And he has this complete personality. So he's like, well, I gotta get that too.
Yeah. Wow. Great. So there you go. True. You've pushed the comic addiction gene just down the line one generation. I think that book though is like, for appealing to like younger people, it's a full-on action figure book. Like it's mm-hmm. like, let's get all these action, dump out the toy box and watch them fight.
And it's totally accessible every issue because there's this insane deep continuity having it that technically is so confusing, but the same time you're like, yeah, that's Tony Stark who is an Ant-Man. He's teaming up with Thor, the god of fists who punch hammers. I get it. I'm good.
Yeah. What also it's like the way that's why, I mean, Jason Aaron is so good because he can be doing all of that at the same time. Like when you see, it's exciting to see the Daughters of Thunder just like pick up a million hammers. You're like, I don't even know what this means. Well, I know, but other people don't. Yep. And it's great.
We got one here from Stray Bullet. What famous rock stars should get their own graphic novel? Ooh, as long as they're from Blue Water or whatever that publisher is, I am there. Those bio comics.
Alex, wow, that's a reverse plug right there.
Yes.
An unplug, as they say. Well, you know, there's the people, the last podcast on the left, the publisher that made their graphic novel, which I think is called Z2, they do a lot of musical biopic stuff. So if you're interested in that, I think that's a good place to go find some. I know that's their sort of focus. But as for who should be,
I mean, I'll throw out, like, I'm sort of mentally challenging myself to not think of, yeah, let's go back to 70s rockers or whatever, who are ultimately more theatrical. If you're looking more modern, I think like Harry Styles is probably actually a good example of somebody who could lean into a graphic novel and sort of create some kind of character. Beyonce as well as somebody who I think you could probably build a graphic novel story around in some way. I don't know. I don't have any other necessarily answers off the top of my head at the moment.
I feel like some 80s rock stars, 80s bands would be great for this because there's a lot of one hit wonders back in the 80s. And there's a lot of like cracks you can sort of push into, like Depeche Mode, Big Country's like one hit wonder band that I really like. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of weird areas to explore with those.
Yeah, and Right Said Fred. That's the big one that I'd say. I'd love to see that.
Devo says Stray Bullet. True.
Ooh, Devo's a good one. I like that idea. All right, here we go. This is from Have You Nerd. Murder, marry, or make love? Live action Batman. Go, JK. Oh, no,
we don't do JK on here. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, kidding. this is great. And it changes the game when it's make love.
Absolutely. Like, who do you want to make sweet, sweet love to?
Yeah.
Whew, live action Batman.
Well, let's list them. Obviously, Michael Keaton.
Right. Wait, are we starting with Adam West? I feel like for Schoeckler in particular, we got to throw out Adam West.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Adam West, Michael Keaton.
Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer, George Clooney.
Yeah.
Then we're going to do Christian Bale.
Sure, Christian Bale.
Robert Pattinson.
Ben Affleck. And just because Pete isn't here, I'm going to throw it out. Kevin Conroy, just because he did it one time on the CW's Arrowverse.
That's a lot of options.
Sure it is. But Mary is the first one that jumps out to me. I think you could probably marry George Clooney's Batman. He just seems like...
He seems to be having fun.
Yeah, he's having a nice time. Just hanging out. A
lot of pranks on set.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would have got to marry Adam West. He was the craftiest Batman. He always had a spray on his utility belt that would solve any situation.
And that's what you're looking for in a wife, right?
100% partner. I would definitely want someone who, if I'm going surfing and there are sharks, shark spray is there.
Mm-hmm. Murder? Man, I don't feel good about murdering any of these guys. I guess Christian Bale, because I don't know.
I'm already dead.
Yeah, I think that's where my brain was going with that one. And make love. Who would I want to make love to? Probably Robert Pattinson.
Really? Why?
He's handsome.
He seems almost the most brooding. He's right up there.
Yeah. Oh, I guess I'm thinking of Robert Pattinson versus Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne.
Interesting. Yeah.
Robert Pattinson, Bruce Wayne, absolutely not. His jaw would be clenched the entire time. I'd be very worried about him.
I got to go with Kilmer.
Good call. Good call.
Just so I can say that I really got with Mad Mardigan.
Exactly. This is from Spear Studios. How do you guys feel about another Hellboy reboot? If people don't know about this, this is from Millennium Films, who is also doing the Red Sonja reboot that is happening. So they're like the Dynamite Comics of film studios at this point.
Yeah. I feel like they were like, what other movie could we make at the same time as Red Sonja?
<They're> like, yeah.
All okay, right. Switch out the Cavalier's
Rod.
Shooting all the red stuff. What's another big red character? Oh, Hellboy. Great. And then they're going to do the Mephisto feature.
Yeah. So hold on. I'm just going to look it up real quick. So here's the interesting thing that I would say about this Hellboy movie, even though I was like, Hellboy reboot, what are we doing here? And then they announced the Hellboy, and it was no insult to this guy, a guy I had literally never heard of in my life. But it is being written by Mike Mignola, which is interesting. To me, well, and it is based on a specific graphic novel as well.
Well, and that's where it feels like this movie is going back to some basics. I feel like this movie has a chance to be weirder mm-hmm. than what we've seen lately. I think the most recent reboot feels like, wow, this reboot is a straight up reboot, like a retread almost, where it just didn't really push the borders into anything else. So I think this, while not having as much prestige and probably budget or stars, I think it will be something that might be closer to the comics, or at least get out of a formulaic Hellboy movie.
Yeah, just to mention the cast, it's Jack Kessy, whoever that is, as Hellboy, Jefferson White as Tom Farrell, and Adeline Rudolph, who we know from Chilling Adventures as Sabrina and Riverdale, as Bobby Joe Song. It's directed by this guy, Brian Taylor, who was the writer on both Crank and Crank High Voltage.
You get him for Crank, you gotta stick with
him. You gotta get him
for He gets the character.
Exactly. I agree with you. I think there's a chance here that it could feel like, oh, we're watching a Hellboy comic actually on screen versus what Guillermo del Toro was doing. But there's also a chance it'll just feel like a cheapy budget horror movie. That's pretty much it. But wow. I guess we'll watch it because
time will tell.
We do this show. Let's see. We live this show. Ooh, here we go. We got a question from Stanley. This is a great tee up for something. I love it when you tee up a plug and questions. Are you excited to watch Shazam 2? Any expectations? So this is a great chance to plug that we have a new podcast that we launched.
Yes.
It is called Sons of a Gun, a DC podcast. And similar to our Marvel Vision podcast that launched when the Marvel shows launched on Disney Plus, this is launching because James Gunn is relaunching the DC Universe. But we're starting a little early and talking through the things that may or may not be connected. So we have a preview episode that we put up last week in the Sons of a Gun feed, which is talking through all of James Gunn's slate and everything that is coming out from DC movies and TV over the next 5 years or so, at least what they've announced.
It could be. It's open-ended, my man.
We'll see.
Like life.
Yes, there you go. And then next week, or actually this week on Friday, we're going to have a rewatch podcast for Shazam. Watch podcast, since you hadn't seen it before. Shazam 2, we're going to be recapping that. And I'll also throw in there, I'm pretty excited about this part of the podcast, frankly, because people have been asking us for a while to talk about graphic novels. We're also going to do required reading podcasts where we talk about the books you have to read or should be reading going into this new James Gunn DCU. So we actually already taped an episode for Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, where we talked about that. Yes. I think for like an hour or so. It was
really, we talked for so long. I was very surprised, but that book is great. And I think it opened up to a lot of other interesting topics.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing a bunch of those required reading episodes, things probably leading into the movies as well. Like when The Flash is coming up, we'll probably reread Flashpoint and talk about that as well as the movies. Sons of a Gun, it's in its own podcast feed. That all said, to actually get around to Stanley's question, what are you excited to watch in Shazam 2 and any expectations?
Well, having watched Shazam 1 for the first time recently, I actually liked it more than I thought I would. I really liked the Shazamly, I guess is a word that I feel bad saying, but I am saying. I liked that aspect of it and the way they brought it together at the end. And I thought it was something that has become a bit rare in comic book movies, that it actually looked good. It was shot well and was well done in the post, from a post-production standpoint. So I hope we see a lot of that, especially coming off my being disappointed by Quantumania. I would be, I'm tentatively prepared to like this.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely in prove it to me mode, which is probably not fair. It's not honestly my favorite way to go into a movie, but we talk about this on the podcast.
Well, you scream it at the ushers, right?
No, I don't like going into a movie being like, prove it. You know, that's, people worked hard on it, regardless of the quality of a movie. So I always like to give something a chance. But man, I have a hard time watching Zachary Levi. I just
agreed. I don't want to spoil all of our Shazam review, but sure, Zachary Levi gets some hits.
Yes, he does. But regardless, we are going to watch it. We are going to talk about it on the Sons of Gun podcast. So Stanley, thank you for your question. And also thank you for teeing up the plug. And I think that's actually it for our audience questions. Whoop. We usually would move on to our next session, which is trivia. Pete is not here. So instead, why don't we talk about why don't we just randomly play some music in the middle of the podcast? Why don't we talk about what's out this week that we're looking forward to? As usual, there's a ton of titles. Justin.
So many.
What do you got?
A lot of great stuff out there. I'm going to plug a couple that I liked. First off, Avengers number 66. We're setting up for the finale rack here of the this arc, which has been so fun and crazy. We've talked about it so much. But the one I really want to hit is Scarlet Witch number 3, coming out from Marvel. That Steve Orlando and Sarah Pacelli, great team on this book, from writer and artist. And this book, I feel like the premise is so good, and it fits Scarlet Witch so well. It's rooted in the Marvel universe while still getting, we get the introduction of the Darcy character from the movies here. So like there's a lot of cool things about it, but it's, the premise is that there's a door in Scarlet Witch's shop that she has that only opens for people who are like out of options. And so when the door opens, anyone can walk in, and it's the sort of mystery or adventure of the week. And I just love it as a refillable, almost procedural option. And Steve Orlando is so detail oriented that to have a book where it's such a clean premise and lets him just go crazy is awesome. So I've been really enjoying that book.
Totally agree on those. Man, I'm having a hard time choosing, to be honest with you, what to shout out. But I do want to give a shout out to Stoneheart, number 1 from Image Comics. Emma Kubert has been really making a name as a third generation artist. And this is her first solo book. Without spoiling too much of the review that we're going to talk about tomorrow, it's a great new fantasy book. There's a good hook to it, and her art really vacillates from very cute to very bloody at the same time.
Yeah.
A couple of other things that I'll mention. I was really interested in checking out Predator number 1 from Marvel, just because the first run from Ed Brisson was so strong. And again, without spoiling it, wild twist in this book.
Yeah.
So good. And the last one, this is the, we'll be talking about this on the stack as well, but Adventures of Superman, John Kent, number 1. We've been loving the Superman book, Superman Son of Kal-El, I think was the name of the previous book. Also by Tom Taylor. This is by Tom Taylor and Clayton Henry. This came out today, and it's just great. I mean, it just continues being great, and
pushing into new areas of storytelling while still maintaining the great character stuff. It's really awesome.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, all of those books and many more books are going to be in our Stack podcast that rolls out Wednesday at 9 a.m. in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Steve Horton for coming on to talk about Zoop's Nine Lives. 2 days left of the campaign. Definitely check that out now. Also, Archie Bon Giovanni. Check out Abrams Mimosa, which is out today and is very fun and great. Laurie Foster, check out Cthulhu is Hard to Spell. There's 14 days left on that particular crowdfunding, and that's a super fun book as well. And Ben Goldsmith, The Seance Room, check that out, as well as the Hack Slash crossover coming on later this year. I also forgot to mention the sponsor for this week's show real quick. It's our friend Juan Espinoza, the man behind Bearded Man Comics, the goal of the company is to create stories showcasing Hispanic cultures. And we've got two great titles, Adventures of a System Madman and Mythology Stories. If you're looking for a fun book about hacking into computers that comes from an actual place of knowledge, definitely check out all six issues of Adventures of a System Madman. And you can also check out Mythology Stories. It was part of a successful Kickstarter campaign. They're all available on Amazon, Apple Books, Comic Central, and BeardedManComics.com. For us, next week on the show, Ben Morse is going to be here to talk about Zoop's We Are Scarlet Twilight. Patreon.com/Comic Club to support this show. Subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok, ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, gotta mow my basement lawn.